to refine it. It was originally just shipped to America to be refined, to be sold in the open markets. Iran went to help Venezuela to get its own petroleum, and that's the way forward, multipolar cooperation.
Thank you so much. Farhi's journalist, author, and activist from Belfast. George Samueli, Senior Research Fellow, Global Policy Institute at London Metropolitan University. Thank you to you both. With that, we come to an end with this edition of The Spotlight from Habitat Witness. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 218 to 219 from the chapter Al-Baqarah from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Innal ladhina amanu wal ladhina hajaru wa jahadu fi sabilillah. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَالَّذِينَ هَاجَرُوا وَجَاهَدُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ أُولَئِكَ يَرْجُونَ رَحْمَةَ اللَّهِ أُولَئِكَ يَرْجُونَ رَحْمَةَ اللَّهِ وَاللَّهُ غَفُورٌ رَحِيمٌ يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْخَمْرِ وَالْمَيْسِرِ قُلْ فِيهِمَا كبير ومنافع للناس قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس وإثمهما أكبر من نفعهما ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو وكذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely those who believed and those who fled their home and strove hard in the way of Allah, these hope for the mercy of Allah, and Allah is forgiving, merciful. They ask you about intoxicants and games of chance. Say, in both of them there is a great sin and means of profit for men, and their sin is greater than their profit. And they ask you as to what they should spend. Say, what you can spare. Thus does Allah make clear to you the communications that you may ponder.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran summons Swedish and Danish charge d'affaires in protest at the repeated acts of Quran desecration in the two European countries. The Iraqi government orders the formation of a committee to follow up on the U.S. assassination of the top Iranian and Iraqi anti-terror commanders. Also coming up, early results in Ecuador's presidential election show that socialist candidate Luisa Gonzalez is leading the race. This is news. Thanks for joining us. Iran's foreign ministry summons the Swedish and Danish charge d'affaires to protest the two countries repeatedly authorizing the desecration of the Holy Quran. The ministry strongly condemned the brazen and heinous acts. It said the Swedish and Danish governments are fully responsible for the serious consequences of such acts of blasphemy. The ministry also echoed warnings by the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution against supporting the blasphemers. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei had said that backing those guilty of desecrating the Holy Quran is tantamount to going into battle array against the world of Islam. The acts of sacrilege have sparked protests and condemnations across the Muslim world, with calls for boycotting Danish and Swedish products. Iran and China have expressed satisfaction over progress in their bilateral relations in line with the 25-year strategic partnership agreement between the two countries. The Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian and his Chinese counterpart Wang Yi underscored growing ties during a phone conversation on Sunday. The top two diplomats also exchanged views on the latest reciprocal as well as international issues. Iran's foreign minister praised ties as positive and forward-moving. The Chinese foreign minister also provided a positive assessment of the relations. Wang described Iran as a key party to the Belt and Road Initiative, stressing the importance of its participation in an upcoming meeting. He additionally shared China's perspective on the forthcoming BRICS summit in South Africa. Iran is among several countries seeking BRICS membership. A U.S. helicopter carrier in the Strait of Hormuz region has landed its aircraft after a warning by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The choppers had violated Iranian territory and flew close to its vessels. Earlier in our news review program, we discussed this latest episode in security in the Persian Gulf region.
Time now for the news review. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it's warned a U.S. helicopter carrier in the Strait of Hormuz after it was caught trying to fly choppers in the area. The commander of the IRGC's Navy, Alireza Tangsiri, says that a U.S. vessel was forced to ground the choppers. He said that this took place in the presence of Iranian naval vessels and a warning. He made a comment in a meeting of top IRGC commanders where footage of the incident was shown. He added that the August 17th incident was the first entry by American forces into the Persian Gulf since November 2021. Tehran has time and again warned away U.S. warships for approaching its waters. Iran says its foreign presence in the Persian Gulf is a security threat that should be stemmed. Now, we're discussing this a bit, so let me invite a couple of guests. Shapir Rizvi is a political commentator in Chicago. Ali Salam is editor-in-chief of Basira Press here in Tehran. Good to have both of you on the show. So, let me begin with Shapir Rizvi. Shapir, first, one basic question. Why should the U.S., warships come all the way from the other side of the planet to this part of the world?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a simplistic question worth asking. The United States always engages in what we call probing missions. You see it right now in the Persian Gulf. You see it in the South China Sea. And even as we speak, at this very moment, it's not using a destroyer ship, but it's actually using Predator drones to actually fly through the Black Sea. And what it tries to do is it tries to see how far it can actually go before it can get a response from whichever state is trying to get a response from. And what it's ultimately trying to do is establish a norm of, hey, we actually are on these waters all the time. Why are you bullying us? But that's actually completely on top of its own head, because these waters clearly belong to whichever state that they're actually probing into. And so what they're just trying to do is just trying to kind of gauge what kind of response that they should expect and try to push that envelope forward and forward each time they do it.
Okay, Ali in Tehran, let me ask you this. I wonder if, which state in this region should be interested in actually soliciting U.S. assistance in any way, or how would the U.S. military presence help anyone in this part of the world?
The U.S. military presence does not help anybody in this part of the world or in any part of the world. We know full well that the United States is behind the creation of ISIS, the very sadistic terrorist group. Of course, the Israeli Mossad also had a role in the creation of this group in order to weaken the resistance axis, and which supports the resistance in Palestine and in Lebanon. As we can see, that their sole interest is in hegemony and domination over the region in order to essentially make the world in their image. So the fact that this is happening under the Biden administration shows that there is a continuity of policy regardless of who is in office. And to be honest, the presidents of America are just figureheads and puppets. It's the Zionist lobby, it's the major corporations and banks, the big pharmaceutical companies, and many other such interest groups which control and dominate the U.S. presidents. And so it's almost as if it's futile to place any trust or hope in negotiating with the West and with the U.S. in particular, because their politicians don't act in good faith. And the real deciders who control U.S. policy are people who you don't know. They're not elected directly by the people of the United States. So the United States should much rather focus on its own problems, which is its crumbling infrastructure, such as the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio, or the wildfires in Maui, or the homeless crisis, or many other problems that they have on their own soil, instead of trying to unleash terrorist groups or militarily intimidate nations who just don't want to be dominated and want to rule over their own affairs with full sovereignty.
Okay, thank you so much for that. Shabir Rizvi in Chicago, Ali Salam in Tehran. And with that, we come to the end of this episode of the News Review.
The Iraqi government has ordered the formation of a committee to follow up on the U.S. assassination of the top Iranian and Iraqi commanders back in January 2020. An Iraqi lawmaker says Prime Minister Mohammad Shia al-Sudani has called for a quadrilateral committee comprised of representatives from Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon. Fadeh al-Khazali said the U.S. was the main protagonist behind the assassination of Iran's Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and the deputy commander of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Forces, Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas. The two anti-terror icons and some of their companions were killed in a U.S. drone strike outside of Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-American President Donald Trump. Pakistani authorities have arrested two key opposition leaders in connection with an investigation into a diplomatic cipher. Detained former Premier Imran Khan claims it contained a threat from the U.S. to oust him from power. A correspondent from Islamabad, Nasser Kazmi, has more.
The vice chairman of Pakistan Tehreek-e-Insaf Party, Shah Mahmood Qureshi, and party's former Secretary General, Asad Umar, have been arrested by the authorities after being accused of misusing a secret official document. Under the country's Official Secrets Act, on disclosing the contents of a diplomatic cipher for political gains, the counter-terrorism wing of Pakistan's Federal Investigation Agency registered a case against the two former federal ministers, along with ex-premier Imran Khan. Khan was sacked from power in April 2022 after he lost a no-confidence vote in parliament. Since then, he has been accusing the United States of hatching a conspiracy with the help of his political opponents and the military to remove him from power through a diplomatic cipher. Khan is currently serving 3-year jail sentence after a court found him guilty in a corruption case earlier this month. He has also been barred from taking part in politics for 5 years. Just moments before his arrest late on Saturday, the former Pakistani foreign minister Qureshi condemned what he called a widening crackdown on his party by the interim government. He said that his party will knock on the door of the country's top court to ensure that the elections be held on time in a free and fair manner.
It was unfortunate that PTI leaders were being arrested and then released after an announcement that they want to part ways with PTI. The caretaker prime minister has said that he will ensure transparent elections. I would ask him how he will do so in such an environment. I would request the Chief Justice of Pakistan and the Election Commission to take notice and ensure a level playing field for PTI.
Political analysts believe that the upcoming polls would be considered as one of the most controversial elections in the history of the country in the absence of one of Pakistan's popular political parties, the PTI.
The chief of PTI, Imran Khan, is in jail. The number two of that party, the vice chairman of PTI, is also arrested in the cipher case. So it looks that the PTI is going to be in a very disadvantageous position in the coming elections. The PTI also claims that thousands of its activists and political workers are in jail and they'll be tried in the military courts.
In the light of the possibility that the general elections may be delayed due to Election Commission of Pakistan's decision to hold new delimitations, major political parties strongly condemned ECP decision, warning that the unconstitutional postponement of elections could escalate into political instability and uncertainty.
According to the political commentators, if the current caretaker setup stretches beyond its constitutional tenure, a lingering period without an elected government could lead to military intervention in the cash-strapped country. Nasser Kazmi, in Islamabad.
Hundreds of Palestinians are languishing in Israeli jails under the regime's so-called administrative detention policy. For many, hunger strike is the only option to make their voices heard. 9 Palestinian inmates are now on an indefinite hunger strike in protest at their detention. 2 of the detainees have been refusing food for 18 days. A 3rd inmate began the strike 2 weeks ago. The 6 other inmates continue their food refusal for the 11th day in a row. According to the Palestinian Prisoner Society, Israeli prison service forces have stepped up the crackdown against the hunger-striking inmates. Israel keeps holding Palestinians behind bars without charge or trial. The so-called administrative detention is being enforced in defiance of international law. On to Ecuador, where vote counting is underway in the presidential and congressional elections. Preliminary results show that socialist candidate Luisa Gonzalez is leading the presidential race. With around 70% of the ballot boxes counted, Gonzalez has garnered more than 33% of the vote. Her closest rival, Daniel Noboa, has received over 24%. There are six other contenders in the presidential election, which is likely to head to a runoff based on the early results. To stave off the second round, a candidate should surpass the 40% threshold or open up a 10-point lead in the race. The South American country held the elections amid security concerns. That is mainly because presidential candidate Fernando Villavicencio was assassinated in the capital Quito on August 9th. Ecuador is grappling with economic crisis and rampant violence. Italians are grappling with record-high fuel prices. This month alone, the cost of petrol reached a new record high for the 17th straight day. Max Civelli has sent us this report from Rome. He says how the price rise is affecting Italians' living condition.
In Italy, August is the time when millions of people take their annual holidays. The large majority of the Italians travel to their favorite destinations with their cars. But this summer, Italians are grappling with record high fuel prices that may affect their programs, with the cost of petrol reaching a new record high for the 17th consecutive day this month.
Our lawmakers in that building over there, they are fine in their government cars paid by us citizens. Fuel costs more than 2 euros per liter today. This is pure madness. There is no reason for these hikes. It's just speculation.
According to official data, the price of fuel with standard quality reached 2.019 euros per liter on the highways earlier this week. Petrol price at some service stations has even reached 2.7 euros per liter. The last time when prices were so high was in July 2022, following the start of the war in Ukraine. The country's industry minister, Adolfo Urso, has blamed the rise in the prices of petrol and diesel to policies adopted by the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, also known as OPEC.
Nobody here is saying that the government's version is blatantly false. OPEC doesn't have anything to do with the spike in fuel prices seen in Italy. The truth is that huge amounts of crude oil are available these days, but our country simply doesn't have the refineries to process it. Each and every proposal to invest in new refineries is thwarted by the government's adoption of green energy policies.
The EU has imposed massive and unprecedented sanctions on Russia, as well as a ban on Russian oil imports over the war in Ukraine. This measure has severely affected the few refineries located in Italy. Fuel prices affect levels of consumer confidence. According to Italy's Bureau of Statistics, Istat, the country's economic morale plunged sharply in July.
This thing is slipping out of our government's control. Everything costs 30 to 40% more. At this pace, we won't be able to go anywhere in summertime.
Italy's main farmers association, Coldiretti, has warned that in a country like Italy, where almost 90% of the goods travel by road to reach the shelves, the increase in fuel prices will result in sharp spikes, over 30%, in the cost of fruit and vegetables. Max Civili, Rome.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
The whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
The starry sky of the desert. From the very heart of evergreen forests. With the radiance of silver-colored sand. In the midst of proud mountains, closer. Iran.
سلام. I'm a nature enthusiast and traveler. In Close Up Iran, I introduce you to the wonders and beauties of my country, Iran. Stay with me. Time. After a long working day, this cup of Iranian tea really hits the spot. No, it shouldn't be like that. I made my beautiful carpet dirty. What a pity. Oh, I have to get it washed. You may be wondering why I got so mad by the mess. Okay. Because Iranian carpet is so precious. Ever wonder why Iranian carpet is famous worldwide? Or why they say it has the best quality among carpets? Well, it should have something to do with its history and origin. And the best place to learn about Iranian carpet and its fascinating history is the Carpet Museum of Tehran. This museum is an excellent source of research about carpets for all culture and art lovers. So, accompany me in our today's tour. Carpet, as an old handicraft, has universal reputation. The Iranian Pazirik carpet is the oldest carpet discovered in the world. This carpet dates back to the year 400 BC. Researchers believe this carpet most probably belongs to the Achaemenid era. Production of Iranian handmade carpets reached its peak during the Safavid era. This art started booming during Fatali Shah of Qajar and further during Nasiruddin Shah of Qajar dynasty, and Iran became the biggest exporter of handmade carpet in the world. The Carpet Museum of Tehran represents a collection of the most noble and invaluable hand-woven carpets dating back to 9th Hijri calendar year to the present time. The museum's collection includes so many rare rugs and beautiful carpets, including carpets from the country's most famous weaving centers. At the museum's founding, there was a limited selection of carpets, but over the years, that number has increased greatly. The museum's library contains thousands of books in multiple languages, including Farsi, English, German, French, and Arabic. These books are a collection of some of the most important and rare publications and research about Iranian carpets available. Furthermore, the collection also includes cultural books on religion, art, and literature. They're available to researchers, students, and art lovers alike. And the adjacent bookstore has pieces available for purchase. Thank you. I get off here. I take a little walk to reach the Lale Park. The museum is located on the northern part of the park. Oh, here it is. The first thing you have to notice is the museum building itself. If you look closely, you can see that this building looks like a giant carpet weaving loom. The first floor of the museum holds beautiful permanent carpet collection exhibits. The museum's second floor, however, is reserved for seasonal or temporary exhibits. Let me enter the museum. Oh, in this interesting museum, you will see loads of different types of Iranian carpet. Look at the pattern. Each one is telling you its very own unique story in the shape of knots, threads, and colors. It's not that strange to say carpets are kind of pious to Iranian people. You know, walking on them with shoes on is normally forbidden in every Iranian house. In Iran, carpet weaving is regarded not so much as an occupation, but rather as an art. As I can see, these carpets have so much to tell you about Iran's history, culture, and art. Here's a fantastic treasury where you will find carpets from different times and all over Iran, from well-designed Isfahan carpets to lovely handmade carpets of Qashqai nomads. Oh, just look at the colors. They are speaking with you. Oh, the design. They are
breathtaking. I wish you were here. You have to see them by your own eyes. You can also make a stop at the museum's tea shop after a long day of browsing carpets and history. A cup of Iranian tea can be so relaxing. I'll take one at this tea shop, but I promise I won't spill it over the floor.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we investigate the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. The British trade union movement has a deep-rooted commitment to Palestine's struggle for freedom. The UK's biggest trade unions are all affiliated to the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, and the TUC has a long-standing policy promoting Palestinian rights. But latterly, some trade union leaders have been yielding to coercion by fanatical pro-Israel pressure groups. And Zionist infiltrators are attempting to subvert trade union support for the Palestinian people. So we've invited a celebrated trade union leader to join our resident expert to discuss these Zionist tactics after this report by Latifa Abu Chakra, who's been looking at some recent examples of trade union infiltration and capitulation.
Trades unions are a new target for subversion by the Zionist movement. Recent evidence of this has been provided by the actions of Unite, one of the largest and most left-wing trade unions in the UK. In June, Unite issued a decree to ban from all its buildings the film O Jeremy Corbyn, The Big Lie. It tells the story of the sabotage, racism, and coordinated smear campaigns of the Labour right and the Israel lobby to bring down Jeremy Corbyn as Labour leader and defame the left. The move appears to have been triggered by the showing of the film at Unite's Tony Benn House in Bristol. But it first came to light in the union's South East region, where a planned showing at Unite's regional HQ in Portsmouth was cancelled by Unite's regional secretary. The union has even gone so far as to ban union branches from even making donations to support the film and its makers. Then, in July, it emerged that a book launch event had been cancelled. The book was The Best-Selling Weaponizing Anti-Semitism by Ace Owen Stanley. The meeting was again planned for Tony Benn House, the Unite building in Bristol. On this occasion, it appears that both the General Secretary and the President of the Union were personally involved. The Assistant General Secretary Gail Cartmell, confirmed that she was acting on the express instructions of her boss, the president, Sharon Graham, which undermined claims by Graham's supporters that she was not personally involved. The email also confirmed that the union was co-opted by Zionist talking points because Cartmell referred to the propaganda line about the deep hurt caused by UK Jews by factual reporting on Zionist subversion of UK politics. Of course, Zionist subversive groups were not slow to take responsibility for the censorship carried out by the union. The so-called Campaign Against Anti-Semitism boasted on Twitter that it was behind the banning of the meeting. Perhaps more worrying is that the fact that the whispering campaign against the film and Asa Winstanley's book is being carried on in left-wing unions, both in the Unite and in the famously left-wing RMT, the Rail, Maritime and Transport Union. It turns out that a key vector of the Zionist penetration of Unite and the RMT is a little-known and cult-like left-wing group called the Alliance for Workers' Liberty. It advances discredited Tel Aviv talking points that there is a specifically left-wing anti-Semitism and that critiques of Zionism as a political ideology on the left are often a camouflage for racism against Jews. The trades union movement is under threat.
As always, we're joined by our resident expert, David Miller. David's an academic and a former professor at Bristol University, and is now a non-resident senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. He's also a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch, and is a leading British scholarly critic of Israel. Our guest today is the legendary trade unionist and pro-Palestine activist, Tosh MacDonald. Tosh is the former president of the Train Drivers Union, ASLEF, and helped to lead the campaign to democratise the Labour Party in an effort to embed a commitment to socialism and anti-imperialism. After the demise of the Corbyn leadership, which was followed by Sir Keir Starmer's ruthless purge of pro-Palestinian activists, Tosh resigned from the Labour Party. Tosh is renowned for his oratory, and he was an outspoken critic of the former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. One of his most famous rhetorical flourishes was when he said he hated Thatcher so much that he used to set his alarm clock an hour earlier so he could hate her for an hour longer each day. Welcome to the show. Tosh, what do you make of the attempt by Unite the Union to ban the Jeremy Corbyn film?
Well, Chris, I'm disillusioned by that, you know, and I get upset when people start trying to ban any kind of film. And I know that the trade union movement has been solid behind Jeremy Corbyn. I know that Unite was solid behind Jeremy Corbyn. And to now find that they're trying to put the block on, or allegedly trying to put the block on, Unite building showing the film Jeremy Corbyn, The Big Lie, seems really concerning to me. I mean, I am a very great friend of Len McCluskey, the previous General Secretary. I know he was very supportive of Jeremy Corbyn and also very supportive of the Palestinian cause.
Yes, indeed. It is rather curious to say for the Unite of all unions to be taking the position that they have on that. But David, I mean, you were due to speak at that Bristol showing of the film, weren't you? And that's not the first time you've been stopped from speaking, is it? I mean, you know, what's going on here, do you think?
Well, there's a campaign to have anyone who would put the case for the Palestinian cause in a full-throated way to be banned and censored. And in particular, those who question whether there is such a thing as an anti-Semitism crisis in the UK or whether there's such a thing as left-wing anti-Semitism, people who make those kinds of arguments, including me and Asa Winstanley and many others, they are people who are targets for being banned. And the problem is, of course, that what's happening is that there are left-wing people and organisations who are trying to draw this line. They're saying, well, we support Palestinian rights in the abstract, but we won't have this stuff about anti-Semitism as a fake, as a scam. And so they try and smear anyone who makes those kinds of arguments as being themselves anti-Semitic. I mean, it's a completely crazy approach, but it is people on the left who are doing this in alliance with, of course, Zionist activists. It's not something that's really coming from the Labour right at present. It's largely coming from the left, and that's the most concerning thing about it, I think.
I know, Tosh, that you've had a number of run-ins with Zionists in trade unions, haven't you? I mean, tell us what's happened in those circumstances.
I will, Chris, and I'll try and be brief. I could probably do a full programme on some of the events that have taken place. But the first time it happened to me was I got invited to speak at a fringe at the TUC in Brighton. I think it was the day after. Do you remember when the Labour Party Hillary Benin particularly got up on the front bench and made a speech about bombing Syria, airstrikes on Syria.
Yes, absolutely.
And he compared it to the international brigades going out to fight in Spain. Well, the next day I was in Brighton speaking and I made a comment on that, and I said that he's wrong to compare it, the airstrikes in Syria, to the international brigaders. The international brigaders weren't perpetrators of airstrikes, they were the victim of airstrikes. I mean, just look what happened in Guernica. I spoke at Popelvel in the Ebro on the anniversary of the Battle of the Ebro. And at Popelvel's a village that's just been left as it was when it was bombed. You know, the Germans, the Nazis, they honed their skills that would come into play in the air raids in Britain. They owned it there. The international brigaders fighting at the Ebro and places, they didn't have a chance against them. You know, the only danger that there was to the German pilots and the Italian fascist pilots that were flying there was engine failure. Mm. That was the first time when it came. It was all over the press. They said I'd compared Hillary Benn to Hitler, which I hadn't done, but this came out all over. Fortunately, I had the backing of a full trade union behind me, and they were able to protect me. The next time, which was probably the worst of all, was when I had the honour of speaking at the International Brigade Memorial Trust's event in Jubilee Gardens, this first Saturday in July every year. And I had the honour of speaking there, and Len McCluskey was the other speaker. Yeah. And I made a speech, many things mentioned in it, and I said, you know, I'm not old enough to remember the International Brigade, as I wasn't born then. And I said, different things will have internationalised people in different generations. I talked about the civil rights movement in America, I talked about the Vietnam War, many different things would have done it. I said, for me, it was the anti-apartheid movement. Mm. That's what internationalised me when I got involved in the anti-apartheid movement against South Africa. And I said, I finished off by saying, what would be the issue that internationalises young people today coming into the movement? And I said, it would be Palestine and the Israeli treatment of Palestine. Now, a guy got up and shouted about it, said something. The next thing, it was all over the media. There was letters being written in. There was an organisation called the UK Lawyers for Israel threatening to take the International Brigade Memorial Trust's charitable status away from it. There was We Believe in Israel, Luke Acost. I think they were asking everybody and the families to write to Aslef, trying to get them to take me out of my position. They obviously didn't understand. Yes. Trade union is a democratic organisation and you're elected to them positions. You're not just kicked out.
No, indeed. Yeah.
So that was another one. I mean, again, with Mark Wadsworth, I was asked, because at a Labour Party conference again, I don't drink when I go to places like that. I want to keep my wits about
Mark Wadsworth, the famous black rights activist who was suspended for asking a question at a press conference to launch the Chakrabarti review into anti-Semitism in the Labour Party.
Absolutely right. Well, he'd been meeting with our General Secretary and other Aslef members, and they'd had a drink, and there was a reception taking place every year. Aslef and the Co-op used to put a joint reception on, and because I don't drink, I was asked if I could keep an eye on Mark, make sure things were all right. I've never had such abuse in my life, from cooperative party members.
Absolutely outrageous. I mean, Mark was introduced as an anti-Semite, and anybody who supported him were tarnished. But let me just move on, though, to David. I wanted you to just say a little word or two, if you can, David, about the so-called campaign against anti-Semitism.
So it's an organisation much like UK Lawyers for Israel, which has direct connections with the regime in Tel Aviv. It has a guy who runs it called Gideon Falter, who has form in making up false allegations of anti-Semitism.
Indeed.
He accused a Foreign Office diplomat of saying the Jews when he had said no such thing, as the court proceedings concluded. And he's also the director of the Jewish National Fund, which of course is part of the core of the Zionist movement. And it's been an organisation which has generously funded the CAA, and people don't generally know this, that the campaign against anti-Semitism is funded by one of the core elements of the Zionist movement in the UK. And, of course, that's what it's there for, is to pursue Zionist interests. It's not an organisation which is interested in any way really about racism against Jews. It's interested in targeting the pro-Palestine movement. And you can tell that from the targets it adopts, but also from the fact that it's funded by the Jewish National Fund, which, as I said, is the is a key and core Zionist movement member.
Yeah. And Tosh, I mean, would you say that trade unions differ in their responses to Palestine and the Palestinian struggle?
Well, I think trade unions differ on most, you know, most issues. There's something different about it.
Yeah.
But certainly, I think in general, trade unions support the Palestinian cause, and have done. I mean, I remember in Aslef when I was a delegate to conference before I held any senior positions or anything, we would have the Palestinian ambassador come and address conference and talk to us. It's always been a close thing to trade unionists. It's the mantra, isn't it? Mm. You know, an injury to one is an injury to all.
Absolutely.
And a worker in Palestine is just is our brother or sister.
Mm. And David, I mean, just say, if you can, a word or two about this whispering campaign in the trade union movement against Asa Winstanley's excellent book about how the, you know, the false anti-Semitism claims brought down the Corbyn project.
Yeah, I mean, as I was saying a minute ago, really, it's a vile thing, is that, you know, that these whispering allegations are not coming from the right, not coming from open Zionist organisations. They're coming from organisations which are of the left and which self-identify, some of them, as Marxist organisations.
Yes.
Asa has tweeted about some of these, the whispers that he's heard, attempts to smear him as an anti-Semite, completely false. I've seen many other internal WhatsApp and Facebook messages where these kinds of rumours have been spread around in the RMT, in Unite, and in other unions as well. And these are organisations which, in particular, the Alliance for Workers' Liberty, which has this position on anti-Semitism, which is that the main problem of anti-Semitism is left-wing anti-Semitism today. And
we'll come back to the Alliance for Workers' Liberty in a moment, but we just need to pause the discussion now, because we've got another report about the attempt to influence the trade union movement by two pro-Israel factions known as the British Israel Trade Union Dialogue and the Alliance for Workers' Liberty that David was just referring to.
There are many Zionist infiltrators in the trade union movement in the UK. But there's also a formal Israel lobby group, the Britain-Israel Trade Union Dialogue, formerly known as Trade Union Friends of Israel. A vice president is Doreen Gerson, who's been involved with TUFI for over 35 years. By 2011, she had taken more than 30 delegations of trade unionists to see Israel. At the same time as working for TUFI, Gerson was the Embassy of Israel's representative in the northwest of England, running its Israel Information Centre. Beitoud claims she seized this position in 2016, but she's still listed in that role to this day. A decade ago, unions like the GMB opposed Trade Union Friends of Israel and banned members from going on propaganda trips. The GMB voted at its 2013 annual conference to uphold a 2011 decision to take a lead in driving forward BDS, boycott and divestment and sanctions. The union also noted that a major priority of TUFI is to fight BDS, and it thus campaigns against the policy of this union. Hence, it determined that GMB members be banned from participating in TUFI visits to Israel. As part of its fight back, TUFI renamed itself so that it would be less obviously a pro-Israel group and more seemingly neutral, thus the name Britain-Israel Trade Union Dialogue. Today, the senior leadership of the GMB has been captured by the Zionist, with General Secretary Gary Smith writing in the Zionist press in 2022 about the union's commitment to fighting a fictional rising anti-Semitism. And the union is at the forefront of attempting to cancel pro-Palestine speakers and activists. A key moment was the role of Momentum leader Rhea Wolfson in allegedly targeting GMB shop steward Pete Gregson for his anti-Zionist activism. Wolfson was an organizer for the GMB in Scotland and long-standing Zionist activist. She was also close to the cult-like Zionist group, the Alliance for Workers' Liberty, having been on the editorial board of its magazine, Clarion. She's now the head of internal and industrial relations at GMB. Union General Secretary Smith was behind deplatforming the rapper Loki from Tolpuddle Festival in 2022. In May 2023, the GMB suspended a former employee and current member simply because his branch passed a motion calling for disaffiliation from the Zionist Jewish labor movement. Predictably, the Zionist cultish group, the Alliance for Workers' Liberty, sprang to the defense of the Zionist witch hunters who had targeted Pat Gregson and extended the smear campaign against him. They also, unsurprisingly, supported both Gary Smith for leadership of the GMB and Sharon Graham at Unite. And now we see the results in the attempt to blunt the edge of pro-Palestine campaigning in the trades union movement.
David, what else do we know about this character, Doreen Gerson, and her role as an agent of Israel?
So she's been involved with Trade Union Friends of Israel, which became Britain-Israel Trade Union Dialogue, and they say that she, until 2016, also worked for the Israeli consulate in the northwest in Manchester and ran its Israel Information Centre. But to this day, as we saw in the film, she's listed as being in that role today, and also she's listed on her own Twitter as being in that role. So we have an organisation which claims to be about dialogue between British and Israeli and indeed Palestinian trade unions, but who actually works directly for the State of Israel. And you can't have much more of an agent than actually having a job working for the Israeli consulate. No. So this is a clear an indication of what the organisation is. It's an organisation to pursue Zionist interests. It's not at all interested in trade unionism.
Mm. Well, Tosh, I mean, the GMB union's leadership seemed to be enthralled to the Israel lobby, certainly of late anyway. But, 10 years ago, the GMB agreed to boycott the trade union Friends of Israel. I mean, what's Aslef's position on these issues?
Well, Aslef have always been strongly in support of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. As I say, we have ambassadors come and speak to our conference. We also send delegations to Palestine a couple of times a year in many cases. I mean, I've been retired a few years now, so I'm assuming that would have stopped during the COVID thing and what have you, whether it's still happening. One experience I remember from that where people would come back and report back to us at the executive committee of what they'd seen. And there was one where they heard things being fired near their hotel. They went to have a look at it and it was tear gas being fired. And it was being fired at kids playing football in the street.
Yeah.
Now that proved two things, just how drastic that can be, but also how train drivers are maybe not the brightest people in the world to hang their head over a balcony when there's tear gas being fired below. But it shows how cruel, yes, wicked and artless it can be.
No, indeed. And David, say a bit more, can you, about Ria Wolfson and the case of Pete Gregson that was mentioned in
video. Wolfson, as we saw in the film there, she was on the editorial board of Clarion, the Alliance for Workers' Liberty newspaper. She's one of the leader in the leadership of Momentum, brought in by John Lansman, of course. But also she's historically been for a long time in the Jewish labour movement, and is a key Zionist in the trade union movement. And she was one of the ones who complained, I think the one who complained about Pete Gregson. Pete Gregson, anti-Zionist activist, and he was removed from his post as a shop steward on the basis of allegations that he was anti-Semitic, which are, you know, manifestly absurd. And he was one of the ones, of course, if you remember, who had a banner outside the Labour Party conference, in 2020 or 2021.
2019.
And the Zionists attacked it, physically attacked it, and destroyed the barrier, the banner. And then I remember, shamefully, Jeremy Corbyn tweeted about how this was an anti-Semitic banner. And it was no such thing. It showed the attack by the Israelis on the Labour Party. And so you have an attempt for the Zionists to move against anyone who would develop anti-Zionist politics in the trade union movement. And the GMB has been at the heart of that, and I'm afraid that goes right to the top now of the GMB.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and Tosh, I wonder whether you might comment on why you think that the GMB has become such a willing participant in this bogus anti-Semitism witch hunt.
Well, really, basically, that's a question more for GMB members and for them to sort out. But I will tell you, it was at a Labour Party conference in Brighton, sat outside the Ship Inn, and the GMB delegation was in there. This is the year before I resigned, I think, from the Labour Party. And one of the people, a good comrade who was working for the GMB, came out and warned myself and my wife that they were in there with the Jewish Labour movement and they were listening for anything that might be said from me. So we were tipped off on that. So there was obviously some people working with and within the GMB at that time, but that's for the members at GMB to sort out.
The Jewish Labour movement, of course, being a dyed-in-the-wall pro-Zionist organisation, aren't they? But David, this Alliance for Workers' Liberty, a small activist clique seem to be an out-and-out Zionist outfit, don't they?
Well, that's right, they are Zionists, and they're part of this whispering campaign against Asis Burke, against the Big Lie film, and they're also, of course, associated with organisations which are directly connected to Tel Aviv. So, for example, there's a guy in the RMT who's written a book, Daniel Randall, about anti-Semitism, about left-wing anti-Semitism, and it's published by a publisher which is owned by a Labour lord who's also part of the Abraham Accords, promoting Israeli normalisation, which is directly connected to the Israeli government. So these are people who are claim to be Marxists and who claim to be anti-racists, but nevertheless they have organisational and sometimes financial links to organisations which are directly connected to the Israeli government. So that's how we should see this organisation. I mean, the interesting thing about it was that the AWL even fell victim itself to the anti-Semitism witch hunt, and many of its members were expelled as part of this process. But nevertheless, it remains strongly of the view that the witch hunt is a good thing, and it's been condemning recently anyone who says that these films have been that the film has been censored or Asis Burke has been censored. They're saying, "Oh, this is made up. These are fake bans. They're not really bans." Now, this is, you know, even the most liberal of persons on the left can see that this is a campaign of censorship, but the AWL apparently can't see that.
No, indeed. It's rather counterintuitive, isn't it, as well? A kind of an alleged sort of out-and-out left-wing, ultra-left-wing body can be so influential on what is now a very right-wing Labour Party. So.
It's extraordinary. But they're working within the trade union movement especially, and that's where they have their biggest influence, rather than in the Labour Party, in the trade union movement, to keep the kind of witch hunt going.
Yes.
Because otherwise it would fall on deaf ears. And they have to have a left-wing cadre to take that forward, and they're part of the reason that happens.
No, indeed. And so, of course, some of these prominent wealthy Zionist funders, I mean, funding some of the senior Labour MPs like Wes Streeting as well, are they not?